Weekend Breakfast
with Refilwe Mpakanyane
on 702 for the curious.
Time now to speak to our parenting expert and human potential author and speaker, Nikki Bush. Good morning, Nikki.
Good morning, Refilwe.
How are you spending your Mandela Day?
Gosh, it's just crept up on us because we're all in isolation and can't gather in groups. Mm. So I guess today is about putting meals together for those less privileged. And I see that some of the schools, including one my sister runs, is running things like meal in a bag.
Yeah.
So we'll be putting a Ziploc bag together, or Ziploc bags together, and in your Ziploc bag, it's easy. You put half a cup of uncooked rice, half a cup of uncooked pasta, half a cup of dried split pea lentils, half a cup of dried split peas, and then another half a cup of dried lentils, plus a stock cube and a packet of instant soup. And find people who are collecting these, and I'll be dropping mine off on Monday, because that's when they're all collecting.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's different to usual when you would normally be in a line making sandwiches together in a crowd. You know, everyone is having to do volunteerism and community service in isolation.
Yeah.
And that's quite a different situation, because Mandela Day has always been marked with almost a gathering of the clan, hasn't it?
Exactly, you know, a gathering and community as well. So in this instance, you're sending your love virtually or from afar. But there'll be no painting of school, of classrooms, and, you know, refurbishing of libraries unless under some very, very strict circumstances. So very interesting times indeed. And I guess if your children had been looking forward to, you know, that annual or if it's annual and not more often, you know, 67 minutes or giving off that time, then today is very, very different.
Yeah, and I think bottom line is really that Mandela Day, we must remind our kids and ourselves that we need to be contributors, not just takers. And volunteerism shouldn't be about 67 minutes once a year. And, you know, we spoke not long ago about generosity. Mm-hmm. And how important the power of generosity and gratitude is. So today is a day when we can be grateful for what we have and share what we have with those less fortunate than ourselves.
Sure. Nikki, today we're talking about parenting teenagers, and it can be an especially, let's say, dynamic time in your life as well as a teenager's lives. How are you advising parents to essentially stay sane on this teenage roller coaster?
Well, this is a very interesting time of life, very fluid time of life, lots of variables. And yes, last week I launched a brand new workshop called Surviving the Teen Roller Coaster and Enjoying the Ride. And it's been an absolute sellout. And we had such a vibey evening the other day with everybody sharing their stories. And not only that, but there are two presenters. There's myself and Savannah Seafall, who's a transformational coach. And we had a teen as part of our session.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very, very interesting to hear what our teen had to say. Shall I share some of the don'ts that she mentioned?
Please do. Because I think there might be specific sort of challenges that parents are dealing with at this time during lockdown that, you know, traditionally they haven't necessarily had to endure. I don't know. Maybe I'm guessing here.
Well, I think, just from a lockdown point of view, what's been, from my perspective, I think that teens have had a really rough ride because they are socially wired, biologically wired to be expanding their circle, you know, their social circle, to take over from their parents one day, you know, when they step out.
Sure.
And in a way, with lockdown, they've been dragged back home, kicking and screaming, and incarcerated, you know. So it's a bit like being put into prison. But, you know, the workshop itself has been about general, you know, raising teens generally. And a really unique, stroke has been having a teen to give us her unbiased, unfiltered
first-hand
opinion, which is very direct. And the parents absolutely loved hearing from her. So the first thing that she said was, don't engage with your child's school about anything unless your teen asks you to. Rather talk through the situation and empower them to communicate with teachers, their friends, or their principal directly. Now, this is a really, really important thing. And I can tell you from having two boys in completely different high schools. One was at a co-ed private school. Mm-hmm. And in private schools, there's a lot of parental interference. Mm-hmm. In government schools, there's a lot less parental interference. And at a boys-only school, the understanding is that your kids will sort themselves out. And I have to be honest, I never saw the inside of the admin block, let alone the headmaster's office. And my son would never have wanted me to have gone in and spoken about anything on his behalf.
Sure.
But it is very, very empowering if you allow your children to sort out their own stuff. And that's the thing about the teenage years, is we should be helping them to build the skills that they are going to need for life. If we keep running interference for them, what are they learning? So, it's an interesting thing. So our role is to actually talk with them about the things that they're going to have to go and communicate. And I remember having a friendship breakup at school, in high school. And it's a disaster, especially for a girl, when you have a friendship breakup. And your role as a parent is to actually guide your child into how to dealing with it. And face-to-face is always the best. And this is a critical thing these days in the era of social media, that if you're having difficulties with friends, for example, that you actually learn how to communicate face-to-face. Because at the minute you put it in writing, either in a letter or on social media, it's published and you can never take it back, and you can get yourself into some serious hot water. So learning the skills of engagement and communication. So role modeling with your kids, you know, having those conversations as if I was your friend who you were having a problem with, as if I was your teacher you were having a problem with, or you had some work that you couldn't hand in on time. Mm. How do you have that conversation? Those are very, very critical conversations.
Absolutely. I think, obviously, it makes sense. It's key that you teach a child how to advocate themselves in real time and in real life, as opposed to online or not at all. What else, what other kind of feedback did you get from this teenager for how parents should not parent a teen?
Right. Here's a big one. Don't share anything with your friends that your teen has discussed with you in confidence.
It sounds like a no-brainer, but clearly it's not, right?
No, it's not. And you know what? This habit, this bad habit, starts very early on. It actually starts when our kids are in preschool and primary school. And I often say to parents with young children, be careful what you say within earshot of your children. Because I find parents will talk about their ADD child or their low muscle tone child in front of their friends. They will talk about these situations that their children find themselves in, these conditions that their children have. Mm. And their children believe suddenly that they're broken and that they're less than. And it takes years for them to get over that mental and emotional wound. But parents continue this situation by sharing what was shared confidentially with them. Mm. You know, my child's going through a breakup with this, or my child's experiencing that, or whatever. And it's really tough, because if we're trying to build a communication channel of trust with our children, they need to know that what they discuss with us will not be discussed beyond that circle. Otherwise, they will not come and talk to us about their stuff. And this is a tough one, because how do you cope in the teenage years if you can't talk to your friends about what you're going through?
Well, you know, as you pointed out rightly, it's a matter of, number one, discretion. So that small thing called earshot, don't do that. But it's also sometimes just drawing a line underneath the understanding that, in fact, your child does rightfully have an expectation of privacy, that what they discuss stays between the adults, at the very least, either stays with you or just stays between the adults that they have chosen to trust, and not the adults that you have chosen to trust. Because they are individuals who've got hopes and aspirations, and privacy is a reasonable expectation.
And actually, privacy is a rare thing these days, as we know, because our kids are prone to oversharing on social media. So they need to have at least one channel where they know it's private. And then the next item on the list is linked, and it says, don't speak for your teen in situations. Okay. Always empower them to speak for themselves. Now think about how often we engage, say socially. You know, you go to friends for a braai, and and your and actually the example that, that was given by the teen is, you know, you have your hair cut and your friend's mother says, you know, oh, wow, your hair looks so gorgeous.
Sure.
And then your own mother steps in before you have a chance to answer and says, oh, well, she's been thinking of doing this for so long and blah, 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 blah. Mm. Instead of letting the teen answer for herself. Mm. You know, whatever it is, whether it's a haircut, whether it's a subject change, whether it's a whatever it is, but actually not stepping in front of your children. And I remember a friend talking to me when my son was about 12.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She said, we've got to stop walking in front of our children.
Sure.
And we've got to start walking behind our children. The older they get, we need to switch positions. We need to stop defending them and intervening for them and let them stand on their own two feet. Because what is the ultimate role of parenting? And this was something I raised in the first session of this two-part series. The ultimate goal is to let our children go. And if we don't gradually start doing that in the teen years, they are not equipped. And that's what they're picking up even in Harvard research of young people in Harvard, that they don't have the life skills to live an independent life because their parents have micromanaged them, have wrapped them in cotton wool and bubble wrap, have intervened for them, and they don't have those skills to go and talk to their lecturers by themselves to get themselves out of sticky situations.
Why do you think contemporary parents do so much of that micromanaging that you're talking about, as well as that interference? Is it because they are, you know, are reflecting or reacting so radically to how they might have been raised? Or is it, you know, I guess we live in an ecosystem where parenting has been fetishized, their whole industries around it, and being the best kind of parent is, you know, something that could occupy your days and your hours every day for years and years and years?
Well, I think there's a number of issues here. The first is that our own triggers and patterning from our own childhood brings up fears and anxieties for ourselves. You know, so the way you were parented or what happened to you. Like, for example, if I'd had a daughter, a friendship breakup, I may have been ultra conscious of my child going through the same thing.
I hear you.
Okay. So that's the kind of thing that can happen. And then we've got this feeling, and currently I think it's very much this feeling of being out of control as parents. So we go into over-control with our teens. And in the teen years, there's big kickback when you go into over-control. In fact, one of the mums shared that she's just finding raising her teen absolutely exhausting because she finds there's no time for fun, particularly in lockdown at the moment, because she's just micromanaging, do this, do that, do this, do that, do this, do that. Because she's fearful of her child falling behind, not getting her grades, not having an opportunity to socialize. In fact, mothers have a massive guilt gland. Fathers have a much smaller one. Mothers have a big one, and it's very susceptible to the slightest little feeling that our kids might be being left out, might not be in the in crowd. And so we also give in often because we don't want to experience a meltdown. So we try and keep our kids happy. We try and keep the equilibrium. And you know what? Being a teen is a roller coaster. They are going to have good days and bad days. Those hormones are raging. One minute you can have a happy teenager, you know, on the crest of a wave, and the next minute they can be crashing down. So, you know, it's actually going with the good and the bad and being there more to listen to them than anything else. So the other one that our team said was, don't say, I know you better than you know yourself.
Sure.
Because they're already struggling to find out who they are. And so she said, we diminish the journey and we create anxiety. Instead of asking how they're feeling and what they're thinking, we tend to say, I know you better than you know yourself, so you should do this.
I know what's good for you.
I know what's good for you.
Although, having said all of that, I do.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm keeping that phrase. Sorry, I'm not chucking it out just yet.
Yeah, well, there was actually another thing. So my co-presenter was saying to me the other day, well, I say to parents, you know what, there's going to be something in your parenting journey where you're going to wound your child. Mm. And you're going to wound your child unknowingly. It might be a one-liner that you throw out.
Yeah.
And when they're in their 30s, they're going to come to you and they're going to say, you know, that moment. And they're still carrying this wound. Mm. And usually it's something very tiny that you didn't even put on the radar.
Yeah.
And Savannah was saying, you know, she says to her daughters sometimes, who are both teenagers, you know, I need to give you some cannon fodder for your therapist's couch one day. And I think we all have something that we remember from our teenage years.
Absolutely.
That we wish our parents had done differently.
Or something that you just muttered angrily under your breath and just thought to yourself, why would anyone ever say that? And of course, unless you've worked it out on your psychologist's couch, you probably will repurpose it and use it when you have your own kids as well. So yeah, that's a great big joke and unfortunate bit about it all. Yeah. The question then becomes, what did parents themselves take out of the workshop after they got this feedback? Were there light bulb moments all around? And was there some pushback, perhaps, of some people saying,
It was actually quite interesting. It kind of just calmed everybody down. Mm-hmm. They all realized, firstly, they were in the same boat. There was a lot of interactivity and feedback. It was an online workshop. And a lot of them, what we did do... is we taught them how to create a safe communication space. And so we practiced this, we role modeled it, we did it in breakaway rooms on Zoom. Mm-hmm. And it'll be interesting to hear next week when they all come back, having done regular daily clearings with their team, where people can put their stuff on the table but not have a conversation about it. You can just say what works for you, what doesn't work for you, anything else that you're carrying, but it does not lead to a conversation, but it does open the door to you hearing what your teen is going through.
Mm.
Sometimes they just want you to know, but not to talk about it.
Sure.
And that's a very different concept to having a conversation.
Yeah.
They might just want to say, I am having a problem with my friend, and it's making me feel terrible, but they don't want to discuss it.
Yeah.
So they need to have a safe space where they can, in the words of my co-presenter, drop their bombshells, mm-hmm. So that you know what's going on. And the important thing in the teenage years is to actually know what's going on in your child's life, even if they are dealing with it. Yeah. And you don't have to deal with it. It's just to be in the know, in the loop.
Yeah, because once you know that, there's so much that you can understand as behavior changes, or as mindset also changes. Because quite often parents just don't know. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and also remember, what happens today in a teen's life can be totally different to what happens in 6 months' time, because they're in such a fluid space. They are shifting brain-body space like a toddler shifts brain-body space in terms of self-discovery, learning about life, their outlook towards life. They really are in a state of massive flux and change.
Mm.
So, you know, let's just be open-minded about that too, that they will be different in 6 months' time.
Absolutely.
Or in a year's time.
Yeah, so let's shift on over then to the talking toys. And you've got something that I would definitely buy and utilize myself. I think this one is not just for the kiddies. I can see this being incredibly soothing and delightful to take part in.
Yes, so paper folding is one of those activities that is it's arts and crafts, but it requires precision. So it's spatial planning, it's fine motor coordination, it's eye-hand control, it's the fingertips are involved, so there's that sense of touch, mm-hmm. and it's very visual. And we've got the Jeco folding flowers and origami aircraft mm-hmm. that I want to showcase this morning. And you can find them in independent toy stores and through takealot.com. They're not expensive, 145 Rand per set. And you've got dozens of flowers and dozens of little aeroplanes to fold. And they are beautifully printed,
yeah.
beautiful colors. You know, they're works of art, actually. And your kids will not only enjoy actually doing the folding to create something that is usable. So the flowers are more decorative, obviously, but sure. The aircraft are for throwing. And then, you know, how far can I throw it? Does mine go further than yours? Look how different my design is to yours. So we compare, you know, that yours is long and thin and mine is short and fat, and that's why yours goes further. Mine drops to the floor, you know, but they are beautiful. They really are beautiful. So and your child will enjoy putting them on a shelf and just, you know, having their collection.
Exactly. And of course, when we think origami, I think sometimes we're tempted to think, you know, complicated folding instructions. These ones are so simple and straightforward. And I still have a bunch of boxes and containers that I've made from these JECO folding kits. So they're really fantastic.
It's like a collector's item.
They really are incredibly useful. Price point?
Yeah. 145 Rand, which is a beautiful price point. That's your sweet spot. Under 150 Rand is a sweet spot and would also make a nice gift for another child if you needed a gift.
Sure.
Yeah? And just in case parents want to get hold of you know, tickets for our next teen roller coaster workshop, they can just hop onto nickybush.com and the booking sheet is there.
All right, fantastic stuff. Nikki Bush, always a pleasure. You and I will touch base next Saturday.
Lovely. Thank you.